This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome everyone to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and our greatest weapon against stress is our ability to choose one thought over another. That and more after a word from our sponsors, NAPA Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology.
Let NAPA Auto Tech's Build-A-Tech program, you know, like Build-A-Bear, help you turn your general technician into a moneymaker for your shop. Make them a profitable member of your team. Go to NAPAAutoTech.com for more details. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? Picoscope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com.
This episode's got a few things. One, Nat King Cole voice. Okay, maybe not that good, but fighting a bit of a cold and sore throat. So maybe that makes it sound really cool. Raspy. Maybe not. I'm going to try to tell a story about my Thanksgiving experience and link it up to our worlds, which I guess we're all human, so regardless, it's going to link, maybe just not automotive, but I think I could do it one way or another if I can get the words out. Anyways, I have to be careful, I think, because the nature of the story could really come off as me putting myself over big time. And I really just don't mean it that way, even though that's probably exactly the way it sounds. I wish there's a better way to tell the story, but it is. Again, I guess putting over is a professional wrestling term for trying to make yourself look really good. And while I'm kind of proud of what happened, I guess I'm not really looking for recognition. I think there's a lesson to be learned from this. Thanksgiving was my family and me. So my wife and three of the kids, or really four of the kids, met over at my parents' place. My brother-in-law and sister are there, and my aunt, my dad's sister, and a friend of the family. And I don't know if it's worth name protecting. I think I'll just do it to out of respect, but we'll come up with a random name. How about Jane for Jane Doe? We're eating dinner, and it's early, right? It's a lunch dinner. And this friend of the family, she's 75, has really been involved with our family for years. Now, her best friend and roommate, and she was kind of her caretaker for a while, was in her 90s. They were around, man, at least for the last 5 years or more. All family functions, holidays, they're just kind of part of it. And we're sitting at dinner and just everybody's talking, right? As you would do. My mom just kind of says, Jane, are you okay? Are you feeling okay? I guess I wasn't really paying attention to anybody or her, but look over and she's, you know, kind of moving her head around and shaking her head a little bit. And she just said, I'm kind of really dizzy. You know, my mom's like, would you rather kind of go sit in the living room for a while and relax or rest? And she said, yeah, I would kind of like that. And I don't know, try to be polite, right? I get up, I got food in my mouth or whatever, and kind of chewing and finishing it, swallowing. And all I'm going to do is offer to escort her to the living room. You know, she is not by any means unable, but I thought if she's a little fainty or not feeling well, that better safe than sorry. And if anything, it just felt like the right thing to do. The table's not that big. In fact, Danielle is to my right and Jane is on the other side of the table. So Danielle's at a corner. Jane is sitting at that other corner, right to the right of Danielle, my wife. And I kind of get up and start making my way over, and it's not like some big journey. She's just kind of like, oof, I am just really, really dizzy. And as I kind of get behind Danielle, Jane's chin just drops into her chest. I mean, just her head drops, her chin is right into her chest. And yeah, my mom's like, you know, calling her name. and calling her name. And again, nothing like super dramatic, not screaming, no panicking yet, but it ain't right, right? I kind of now move. And again, it's like a step away, and I grab her hand, and it is cold and clammy. I mean, cold. You know, I kind of shake her hand a little bit, grab her wrist, and now I have my hand behind her head, kind of in the neck area, and that is cold and clammy. And I kind of shake a little bit, and, you know, hey, call her name a few times, nothing, no response, and she's cold. What do you do? I drag her to the ground. I get her on the ground on her back, and she was talking. So I don't think she's choking, but I look anyways and check her airway. It's open as far as I can tell. Like, again, a lot of this I'm rattling off maybe makes it sound like I think I know what I'm talking about. And I don't want that to be conveyed at all. But I had first aid class in school and CPR training from high school. Health class. I don't think we even had CPR training in college, to be quite honest. Yeah, maybe some first aid stuff, but nothing with first, like CPR or anything like that. And I check her airway, nothing. I try to check her pulse. I don't trust my hand. My heart's beating pretty hard. My fingers are pulsing pretty hard. I do not trust whether I felt a pulse or not. I put my head down to her mouth. All I heard was gurgling. I'm left with, like, what else is there to do? I don't have any real information, right? For me, I think, or anybody, what we have, cold, clammy skin, no response, no real breathing. Even if her heart's beating, I've never heard of somebody stopping a heart with chest compressions. I guess, you know, not to jump around a little bit, but I got to level with you. Once I grabbed her to take her down to the ground, which makes it sound like we're in MMA, but when I grabbed her and pulled her down off the chair into the ground, I got to level with you. The room disappeared. Everybody else in that room, I don't know what they were doing. I don't know what they were saying. I don't know anything. All I know is I was very focused on her, what was going on, and what I was going to do or needed to do. And I felt like at that point, I had no choice but to start chest compressions. And I just remember saying, I have to do it. I'm starting chest compressions. I get my hands into position and I go thinking to myself, like, once I start this, I'm probably going to have to maintain this for 10 to 15 minutes. And I have to keep a beat of roughly that of the song Staying Alive. So that song is now in the back of my head, that beat, that rhythm. And I lock my elbows because I'm going to take advantage of my size and weight. I'm also thinking this, if I'm going to deliver a chest compression, I'm going for it. Like, you can't mess around. I'm not protecting her. I'm trying to squeeze her heart. And so I lock my elbows and I deliver the first chest compression. And you could hear and feel rib cage, sternum crack. I honestly thought to myself that was good feedback. As sick as that may sound, I think that to me was a sign like, okay, that's what you need to be doing. That's where it's got to be. And again, I have that beat in my head. I'm getting ready to start the second compression. And her eyes fly open and she makes just this sound. I got to level with you. The first feeling was not relief. I was pissed, and not because she woke up at all. I was pissed because I thought, you dramatic TV super cape wearing idiot. That is what went through my mind. Like, immediately was, what the hell do you think you were doing? You just probably cracked her rib or ribs, made a big ass scene for maybe nothing. I get it. She was not responsive until I did it. But did I really need to do that? And I was hissed. But then it was kind of like, again, focus on what's being presented. And now she's awake, doesn't understand why she is now looking up at the ceiling and me hovering over her. Yeah, I start asking her, are you okay? How do you feel? She said, I'm still a little bit dizzy. I said, do you know your name? And she knew, said her name, her real name, not the one I made up. And she also I asked her if she knew what day it was, and she knew it was Thursday. And so I thought that was really good. She asked if she could sit up. I said, I don't know if that's such a great idea just yet. Let's just pause. And then I heard my mom on the phone with 911, the operator asking some questions, and the operator is probably not the right term. But I just remember turning to my mom and saying, she's lucid. And the operator just kind of said, the ambulance is on the way, and I think hung up. So Jane's laying there staring up at the ceiling and asking why she's staring up at the ceiling. And I said, you're unresponsive. Like, you thought you left us there. And I can already now feel heat in her hands, and I can feel heat in the back of her neck. She asked again if she could sit up. And I said, well, let's go really slow. And if you feel anything odd, just we'll let you back down. And I slowly sat her up. My sister was there the whole time, and she got kind of behind her with her legs to hold her up, give her kind of a backrest with her legs, and started kind of asking her some questions and leaning more towards like stroke type questions, aimed more towards stroke. I get why you ask. And I don't know that I wasn't thinking stroke. That wasn't what I was thinking. I honestly thought that her heart stopped, or other than that, I didn't know, or the heart was not doing its job. And I don't know what I was doing to help it. So I was, again, worried that whatever I did was not needed. And after what seemed like an eternity and just making small talk with her, the ambulance arrives and the EMTs come in, and I tried my best to rattle off what happened. And then I said I delivered a chest compression, and she woke up like almost immediately, or at least I was awake before I delivered the second chest compression. And I'm very worried I didn't need to do that. And so they're kind of checking her out, and her blood pressure was extremely low. At one point, it was 70 over 40. So they hook her up to their, I think like a 4-lead EKG, and I would really like to look at that. And so I got to see it, and she was in atrial fibrillation, and she had some PVCs, which is like preventricle contractions. And they're not necessarily bad. Like, a lot of people have them. A lot of us have them. You might not even know. Or if you do, they're super random, and you might feel a little, you know, flush or something, but they're typically very benign. But if you have a few PVCs at a certain frequency, like a number of times, sometimes it can trigger atrial fibrillation. But I said, she's in AFib right now, but you shouldn't pass out from atrial fibrillation unless you're kind of suffering from like a, I guess, heart failure. Like, you know, atrial fibrillation is the top, I don't want to say the top half, but the top of the heart. And atrial fibrillation, the sinus node of your heart. So there's a part of the heart on top that kind of triggers the beginning of the beat of the heart, starting from the top and then working its way to the bottom. And that node, which is kind of what it sounds like, almost like a little, I hate to say module, but it dictates the beginning of the and the firing of the heart, is surrounded by cells, if you will, that are also capable of firing the heart. And what happens is that other cells start firing, and the top of your heart starts to kind of flutter or vibrate, and usually in high frequency. Someone might say your heart rate jumps up to the high 100s, even 200s. It's not really beating that fast, but the top of the heart is vibrating.
NAPA AutoTech training sessions are being conducted day and night in the town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA AutoTech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. AutoTech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. AutoTech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the AutoTech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Autotech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training. Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com.
The top of the heart doesn't do as much work as the bottom of the heart. So therefore, people that have AFib sometimes don't even know they have it. If they do, they might feel off. Some people do get pretty really off, just really low energy. But tons of people have it, don't even know they have it. Or if they do, it's just they feel a little off. If the bottom side of the heart is now not doing what it really needs to be, then maybe. So I say that, and then now the EMTs are asking me if I'm a doctor. I don't know. I thought that was hilarious. No, not even close. Just interested in waveforms and my experience with both my AFib, which I will go in and out of on my own, and now my dad with all his heart stuff, and just kind of crash coursing that stuff and talking to cardiologists and whatnot about that. Then you decide they're going to switch her over and look at a full-blown 12 lead. So they take her into a different room for some privacy and hook her all up. And I thought it was interesting and funny that they got the printouts and brought them out to me to look at. For one, I think just they knew I enjoyed it. And two, just, I don't know, talk about the waveforms, honestly. Again, and none of it really explained why she would go out. And my concern was that we're not going to figure it out. And I'm sure it's not going to figure it out, but nobody's going to figure it out based off that. The real test will be an echocardiogram where we're going to see the squeeze function of the heart, the ability to move blood. That was not going to happen in the field, of course. So we have the option to either she can ride in with the ambulance or we can take her in separately. And they would offer to follow us, which I thought was very, very cool. But she stood up, did not feel well. And I think rightfully so, elected to ride in the ambulance just in case. I don't know. It was it's a happy kind of ending, but part of me was very, very torn. I was very upset with myself in that I may have overreacted and I had nothing to tell me I did or didn't, other than I felt the very reasonable conclusion of what else is there. For any of us, at any point, if somebody becomes unresponsive and you can't categorically state whether they have a pulse or not, what are we left to do? Chest compressions. Even if their heart is beating and they're not breathing or breathing properly, the chest compressions should help at least oxygenate their blood enough to keep them alive and prevent or greatly mitigate brain damage. I don't think she suffered any real brain damage, because if she was going without oxygen, it was for seconds. And that's an if, right? I'm not really trying to put myself over. So she gets into the ER. They do a bunch of tests. Her neighbor shows up at the emergency department. We're not there. I'm not there at all, but we have her vehicle. And they call and ask if we'll bring her vehicle in. So my dad, sister, and I run her vehicle in. I fully expected to just go in and drop her keys off, but they took me back to her room. I called my dad and sister to come in and visit. She looked way better. Her color was back. Her blood pressure was back up, arguably even high. But yeah, it wasn't 70 over 40. They had that monitor, you know, monitoring her O2, which was really good. It's kind of an EKG, but it's not that good. I was watching that. You could still see PVCs, but she seemed to be out of AFib. A nurse kind of came in, asked a few questions, and then I guess they had called for a bunch of tests, chest x-ray, and they weren't going to do a echo on Thanksgiving Day, I don't think, especially when she's stable. I left kind of feeling bad because I don't know. I didn't know, did her heart stop or become very ineffective? And my chest compression helped with a surge of blood or get her heart going enough at least to, of course, regain consciousness. Did the chest compression wake her up out of pain? Like the surge of pain, was that what really woke her up and not a need for blood to be pumped through her body and particularly her brain? So I kept wrestling with it. It's just so, so upset that I may have just, what were you looking for, man? She just jumped into action. What? So you could get the Superman cape out and have everybody just, oh, wow, man, you saved your life. Ooh, hero. I couldn't think of what I kept coming back to. What do you have to do? You know, I wasn't worried about her being upset or anything. It was just me. My mom knew that I was very much wrestling with that. Later that night, the results from the doctor came in. And the doctor did go in and talk to her about Jane, talked about the results. And the chest x-ray revealed that I cracked or stress fractured her sternum and that her lungs, either the x-ray or else maybe they did a CT, I'm not sure, but they found lots of blood clots in her lungs. And he said the stress fracture of the sternum is a very common from a chest compression, but don't be mad at him because he saved your life. I really needed to hear that. Not that I saved her life, but that I did the right thing. I needed to know that I didn't overreact. Even if truly didn't need to do that and left with what else do you do? I don't know. I was very worried about jumping the gun. So that was a big relief. And she went to the ICU for a while to try to get those blood clots out with heparin. Yeah, I think she's home now. So that's awesome. Which then I suppose leads to what the hell does this have to do with cars or shops or anything? The hell if I know. I'm just kidding. I got to level with you. I've been calling around trying to get CPR training. First aid and CPR training, because I got to level with you. This will sound very condescending. And I don't mean it that way, because why do we assume people know anything? But I'm looking around the shop and I'm thinking, if I drop, who's the one going to act? Because I know if something happens to somebody there, I will act. I will try to do the right thing, the smart move, whatever that is. You know, contain. If there's an injury, I will act. There will be very little hesitation. If somebody drops and needs chest compressions, now I know I will be more than able to do that. But what if I drop? What if I'm not around? Who's going to do it? The important thing, I guess I'm trying to convey, is stuff happens and wouldn't have to be one of us, like one of the employees or people that work there. What about a customer? And is there an IED at the shop to use? Is there anyone trained in CPR? How about just first aid? You know, what if there's a kind of an injury in the back? How close are you to the hospital or medical treatment? How soon can an ambulance be to the shop? Does everybody know how to use a fire extinguisher? And there's a difference between using a fire extinguisher just for fun or to get in trouble and when you need to put a fire out. It turns out people panic, even if they're not, you know, running around crazy and acting like some comical version of panic. Real panic is freezing. Real panic is fawning. It's really uncontrollable, and a lot of us aren't going to find out how we act until we're in it. And all you can do is try to stack the odds in your favor that people will be able to act. So is there training out there to bring somebody in, light a big fire that's enough to be unnerving, and have somebody reach over to a fire extinguisher that is attached to a wall or something like it normally would, And can they release it, get it in position, pull the pin, and properly apply the chemical or whatever, you know, depending on the fire extinguisher? Because too many times people, all they have to go on is what they saw on television. And sometimes, if not a lot of the times, it's nowhere near right. People get a fire extinguisher and they just start spraying that thing all over the place. They're not aiming for the base. And yes, some of us are sitting there going like, where else would you spray it? Of course you go to the base of the fire. Common knowledge isn't common, because why would anyone know what we know? If you know the right thing to do, why do we assume everybody else should know exactly what the right thing is to do? And therefore, it's worth trying to find. And I think like some fire departments will do some training that way. I think the Red Cross does certain trainings. But does your team, everybody there, know what to do? And can they do it in a stressful situation? Because honestly, my experience in a couple of situations is many, many people don't, or there's hesitation. And sometimes that hesitation is a big deal. Don't get me wrong. Like, moving too fast isn't good either. I guess I remember in elementary school, of all things, STOP, the acronym for STOP was stop, think, observe, proceed. There's a lot to that. Sometimes, yeah, pumping the brakes. Or a friend of mine, Aaron Keppen, would say, sometimes you have to slow down to speed up. And there is a lot of validity to that. Like, you do have to take a second or some time to truly assess the situation, right? I didn't just drag this lady to the ground and jump on top and just start hammering on her chest or start delivering chest compressions right away. I'm not saying what I did was anywhere near expert level, but it was something. You know, in the fires that I've been in, I guess I don't even know, can you even call them plural? Like, one was a pretty good one, bad, and the damage it did, but can you make rational decisions? Like, for me, the initial first rational decision was, of course, to grab the fire extinguisher and start dispensing the chemical. The problem was the fire was by far too big and it was being fed by fuel. Even though the fuel was disabled by that time, the fire was beyond what the fire extinguishers we had were going to be able to control. So then the next rational decision was save what we could save and get everybody out safely. A lot of people, they literally freeze or they got to get out. They fly. It's flight. They're not in control, right? Like, it's not some big character flaw. They didn't know they were going to act that way until that very moment. And they didn't realize it until afterwards. It's very reasonable, I think, to educate ourselves, get education for our people to really mitigate those things and maybe take tragic situations and make them either less tragic or not tragic. Not everything will always be a happy ending. Luckily, in my case, it did. It's crazy that almost 2 years to the day, almost, was when my brother had to do that to my dad. He had to deliver the chest compressions the whole time and then have it taken over by the EMTs when they got there. But again, he had to act, and he did it. It's insane. I probably should have looked, or I should call Margaret and find out if there's something to do with the holidays or being around people, families, safe places, that if your body is just trying to survive, that when you're in that safe place, that's when stuff like that happens, because you relax, you know, even unwittingly and involuntarily, just kind of let loose, let go, subconsciously even. That's just an interesting thought to me, how that played out, that she was there for that, because she could have been driving, she could have been home alone, she could have been anywhere else but there, and it just so happened to be there. And I'm not saying I'm the only one that would have acted. It doesn't matter. It's just, I was there to act, and luckily it worked out really, really well. So that's how I'll leave you. Thank you so very, very much for listening. And thank you so much for the continued messages and questions. I'm probably getting close to being able to do another mailbag, and hopefully before long we can do a live Q&A with Margaret Light and take on the mental health questions you may have. Yeah. Thank you to Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology for sponsoring. And thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network for making this all possible. And if you have any more ideas, want to be on the show, have any questions, please feel free to shoot me an email at mattfonzelpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, you can also reach me on social media. So until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonzelow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.